great. And I'm in a studio, perfect. So why not?
Yeah. So are you real busy doing electrical work these days? Is that is it because you love it and you just wouldn't want to do too much music? Just kind of keep.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. I've got my son to apprentice at the moment as well. And
working
with him. He's 22 now. And working with Ryle is it's a privilege, you know. I feel a very lucky dad to be hanging out with my son, age 22.
That is pretty cool.
For a lot of dads, I think that's kind of goodbye time.
Yeah.
We're just having a ball. It's been a real adventure in Orkney, setting up the business and contracting together. And contracting in Orkney has its quirks and interesting wee experiences. Like doing jobs, there are many small islands in Orkney. And of course, the people in the small islands, they don't always have an electrician available on island. So they need to get the guys in from mainland like ourselves, from the bigger islands, to come and stay for 2 weeks and do a rewire. So we've done some of that. We did a rewire in North Ronaldsay for a Knoxville-based violin maker whose father comes from North Ronaldsay. And he's bought a Button Bend there. He's going to be making violins, I think, maybe. Well, I'm speculating here, but perhaps he's going to be making violins in North Ronaldsay as well. North Ronaldsay is the most remote of the Orkney Islands. And was lovely to stay on.
You like remote islands, don't you?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had some adventures on different remote islands and, North Ronaldsay was just one of just the latest in a long line of wee islands that I've explored.
Think you mentioned in getting your son to apprentice reminded me of I think I saw a picture that you'd shared a while ago, maybe of your van where you'd added "and son" or something like that to the logo. And it did make me wonder just for a moment, because I wasn't sure if you were in Orkney or I knew you weren't on Ascension anymore, but it did make me wonder, like, I wonder if the next thing to do when contracting in that part of the world is to then also get like a tugboat with your logo on it too, you know?
Well, that would have its merits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That would have its merits, particularly say, if we were to be getting inquiries from Hoy and Flotta, which are fairly nearby, then to have like a little twin diesel or something, that would be a new way to do business in Orkney.
Yeah.
Or we could have one in Kirkwall, and you could make your own hours on the smaller islands rather than having to rely on the ferry timetable.
Yeah.
Maybe if we can get enough steam up in the business, maybe we could get ourselves. That's what I would want. I would want one of these little twin diesel launches, just go zooming off. Whether or not it's for the business, I want one of them anyway. It would be really fun to have something like that in Orkney.
One of the side benefits of having like business needs, if you can make it so it's something that's also fun,
exactly.
Why not?
Yeah, totally.
That's a business expense.
That's been fun though. Yeah, it's been quite an adventure. And our usual run, unless we're working in the village or on the island that we're on, South Ronaldsay.
I bet you're not the first one to have ever mixed them up. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah, totally. But if we're working on mainland, then our commute is over the Churchill barriers. So it can be exciting sometimes because waves come right over them.
Oh, yeah.
So we've had to hose the van down a few times. But it's also pretty spectacular.
Yeah. I don't mean necessarily, I'm sure that listeners are like, get onto the bagpipes, right? But I can't help but keep being curious, as an electrician in a wet place like that, I mean, like I live in a really, really dry place myself and not an electrician, but I work with a lot of electricians. Is corrosion just like a constant thing there? Like, is your van, do you have to worry about leaving stuff out in the van too? Like stuff will get ruined if you leave it out there? Dehumidifiers everywhere?
Well, we have to, it's not quite as humid as that, but we do have to make sure we hose the van down because it gets hit by salt a lot.
Yeah.
And you're always very near the coast in Orkney. And when we're on the barriers, we're on a sort of single carriageway, two-lane road. that has no breathing room at all, and is directly beside the sea, virtually at sea level. Maybe a few meters either side at high tide, a couple of meters either side, if it's a really high tide. And if the waves decide to start coming in, you can take a wave broadside.
So that's gotta be stressful.
Yeah, they get closed if it's really bad, but you can get fairly thoroughly washed with salt water, and that does take a toll on vehicles.
Yeah. On those ones, do they control traffic going one direction versus the other, so you don't end up nose to nose halfway out in the water?
No, they do have two lane.
Gotcha. So,
but because they're very narrow, people who are not used to driving on them, you'll get people coming up for a holiday or something, and sometimes they've come from somewhere further south where they're not even used to single track roads or narrow roads or passing places. And you sometimes see people driving down the middle of them, down the white line, because they're frightened to get too close to the bollards out of the side. But there is actually, you can have a lorry going. I'm pretty sure if it's a large vehicle like a lorry or a bus, then they tend to wait for each other at one end. But if it's, I can pass a bus on it. A normal vehicle can pass a bus on it, a car. Mm. Although some people will wait if the bus is on the bridge, is on the barrier, they'll wait until it crosses, because it wasn't really built with modern, standards. It was built during the war, and it was a bit of an excuse, because what they needed was a submarine defense down the eastern side of Scapa Flow. And the available labor they had to build it was prisoners of war, so they couldn't make it a war thing under the Geneva Convention. So they put roads on it and made it into a civil project.
It's submarine defense with a road on top.
Well, the road on top takes music.
Interesting.
So there's talk every now and again in the local paper about whether these barriers should be upgraded or how to improve the defenses and all this kind of thing, because there is a developing problem beside one of them where sand is building up and the waves are getting over more easily. But the end game of that is that the sand will just build up completely to that side of the barrier, they reckon, and then the waves will not be there anymore. Quite an interesting commute, that.
Yeah, I had a friend who, I don't know, you might have even seen he's got some great videos on social media and stuff, playing small pipes and singing John Charles, who went to Uist. I can't say that word, man. Every time I think I'm going to say it, I'm like, nope, I sound like an idiot. But you know the place I'm talking about.
I do.
He was there not long ago, and he left myself and another friend, he left us a couple voicemails where he was walking to and from this, I think the idea was Gaelic song is what he was there for. But he's walking back and forth along these single track roads, and sometimes catching a little hitchhike, a little ride to or from somewhere. And just, kind of like just talking, just as he's talking to us, we can hear not just the wind of the island all the time, but the cars whizzing by on those narrow roads, right?
I'm going to check with Nick if it's all right if I keep doing this in here.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Come back into the studio.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll be back in a bit.
No problem.
The dogs have come to see me as well. Yeah. Carry on, James. Sorry.
Well, So one thing I was just curious generally about is are you Orkney permanent forever now? Do you know for certain, going back to Ascension,
I mean, we've talked about that, because who wouldn't talk about that? Yeah. Being in a perpetual July, and it's some island, by the way, there's never any storms there. There's never any storms. There's barely any rain. Every now and again there's a day of heavy warm rain, but that's like every maybe year or two. And you can grow vegetables all year, which these are the things that matter to me. You can go fishing. The fishing season's all year. The shore fish are bigger than your head.
And this is how a lot of people describe heaven.
Exactly.
In fact, I remember in the I think it's in I think it's in the Odyssey that Odysseus talks about going to a place where it's like it's just harvest after harvest and vintage after vintage, and you know, like it just never stops. Maybe he was talking about Ascension Island.
He could have been there. Yeah, he could have been there. Bananas anytime you want. You can pick bananas any time of the year on the mountain. And for about half the year, you can pick all the guavas you want. There's an absolute abundance of guavas. So yeah, I mean, I think, well, who wouldn't talk about going back? You can swim in rock pools. You daren't really swim in the sea because it's infested. It's infested with thousands of sharks.
Good heavens! Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Well, that put a damper on it. Yeah. Suddenly, I'm imagining being there with all my kids and just being like, "No, they can't go outside."
No, it is. The land is pretty safe apart from the rubble and the kind of slidiness of the rubble and the grit. There's no animals on land that would do any harm to you, really. You know, maybe the donkeys might headbutt you or something or kick you, but the sea has thousands of sharks. Some of them quite dangerous sharks, like tiger sharks and things, and moray eels everywhere. So if the sharks don't get you, the moray eels will try.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's full of good fish. So if you like fishing, quite a place. They're enormous. My favorite to go after was the groupers, because they are probably, to me, they're the tastiest on the island. I do like tuna, and you can get tuna. Tuna is huge as well. But the groupers are the main kind of, they're the main rockfish that hides in the rocks. There are a few wee rockfish as well, rock bullseye as well, that's a wee bit smaller. And some people prefer that and say that's a tastier fish. It's a smaller fish. But I really celebrate the grouper. I really enjoyed that.
Well, what about where you are now in Orkney? Is there good fishing, but also have you found any wildlife to record audio from?
No, not yet. No, I haven't gone around to do anything like that, but I did a lot of that in Ascension. But I've done a bit of fishing in Orkney. There's more of a season to shore fishing, obviously. And when it's on, we caught the last bit of shore fishing I did towards the end of the season was right in the village. The mackerel were all running around the shore in the village. And it was basically, you could have put your hand in and caught them, but I just kind of dropped in some feathers and bang, bang, you know, caught a whole load of them. And
some feathers did it, huh?
Yeah, they're very tasty fish. Mackerel are great. They're really good here, fresh mackerel. But yeah, there's a variety of fish. And for those that have a boat, which I've not got here yet, you can fish, you can have a longer season. And growing as well, I mean, you know, it's not as easy to grow, say, cucumbers and things like that as it was in Ascension. But we're experimenting a wee bit with growing. And we've got a little sunroom, and I'm in the process of repairing a greenhouse. And we've actually got a wee lemon tree in the sunroom, so we're still managing to grow some tropical sort of fruits, even though we're in Orkney.
We've had winter.
Totally winter Orkney lemon.
Yeah.
we had a toddy on Christmas Day made with an Orkney-grown lemon.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool. And my wife's been experimenting with cheesecake made from it as well. So that's fishing is good. Yeah, it's good. It's not quite not the same sort. Fishing in Ascension is a much more kind of, you know, some of the things that come out of there are the size of you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of eye to eye. You know, it's a bit more kind of brutal at times. But fishing is good in Orkney. I have enjoyed it.
Well, Donald, I feel like I know enough of your personality from from reading things from you online and stuff like that too, to know that you're not going to be the kind of person who would be in any way like have a big ego and be like offended by me not knowing everything about every project you've ever done.
Yeah.
At the same time though, Donald, but so cool too, you know. But also every time, last time we talked, and I was doing some prep work then, and as I was prepping for this one as well, every time I go looking for like, because when I have a guest on who's done projects, I like to read up about the projects, you know, so there's stuff to talk about. Every time, Donald, I don't reach the bottom of the barrel. Like, yeah. I go, oh, he's done this. Oh, he's done that. What is that about? This time it was the soundtrack for the film My Old School. That one took me down such a rabbit hole, man. That my whole week. That's all. I've never heard this story before. Yeah. I didn't know about this. Was it Brian McKinnon?
Brian McKinnon. There were two of them. So my good friend Brian McKinnon, who's the same age as me, was also in our class. And his real name is Brian McKinnon, the fraudster. And so he had.
But he went by Brandon Lee. Is that what it was? Yeah, that's right.
And so he apparently had a nervous moment on the first day when the teacher called out Brian McKinnon from the register. That was my good friend Brian, who now lives in Boston, he was in the film as well. Brian, young Brian, we'll call him. Was in the film as well. Was interviewed. Did you watch the film?
I haven't been able to watch the film yet. I didn't find a good place to watch it. I should look a little harder. Mostly I was just reading about like the news stories when the news broke and stuff, you know, that's where I went to after reading about your project.
I'm going to get my tuppence worth in now. So that Brandon Lee guy comes out with some story about nose picking, alleged nose picking. And all I'm going to say about that is that the whole film is about how you can't trust a word that comes out of that guy's mouth. So there you go.
Yeah. No, but I'd never even heard the story before. It's just wild. And so you, not only did you do the soundtrack, some of the work on the soundtrack for that film, but like, you were in the story, like you were there.
Yep. I was there.
That's
I was
wild, there. Man.
Yeah. I sat beside him in physics.
Man.
He's full of nonsense.
That is just crazy. Did you ever suspect, did you ever think to yourself like,
At first we all thought, well, he does look quite, you know, a bit older. But he was very baby-faced. Mm-hmm. And he had a story about having dry skin or something. Because despite being baby-faced, he didn't have kind of, you know, he could have been more fortunate in terms of, you know, that he definitely did have, like, the sort of skin complexion of a 30-year-old man. So, you know, he wasn't quite that baby face, because there are those and those who are out there. Mm-hmm. You can imagine even getting away with it on that basis. But he was youthful. He got away with it on that basis. Because by the time you're 17 or wherever we were, everybody has reached usually their full height or most of the full height.
And there are some among you who do look like they could be 30, absolutely, by then, too. Yeah. That does happen.
There are already, boys that have kind of, you know, matured more quickly. So it is more confusing at that age. And he's also, he talks a good game.
Well, that's one wild project, but it's one among so many. The other day for Christmas, we got my oldest son a breadboard. And just like some little computer projects to make lights flash and stuff like that, you know, kind of get started playing with it. And that made me think of your wild chanter, you know, your optical chanter with all the cords around, you know, and the breadboard there and everything. And I'm just thinking like, man, how would you define yourself, Donald? Like if you had to tell me like, hi, I'm Donald Lindsay, here's what I do. Yeah. I mean, as of today, how would you describe that? Cause I'm sure it's going to change in a couple weeks.
No idea. Can I think of an answer to that question?
you take some, go ahead and take some time to think about that. Maybe a way to work our way toward it though would be, what are you most invested in today? What project are you like most drilled into right now today?
Front and center right now is all about family life and the electrical business. My son's apprenticeship, renovating a house that we've got in Orkney, which we don't live in yet. And just all of that and settling into island life with my family. Other than that, what am I most invested in right now? What I'm most invested in over the winter is making recordings. So we did about 91 minutes. So we think it's going to be a double album. And it's all songs. We did do two pipe tunes, but we weren't very focused on pipes for this one. So it's all songs, five original songs, two of which I wrote in Ascension. A load of traditional songs, and so that record is going to be all about songs, and it's with Rue Geddes. Alistair and me have just finished doing a record in Green Door Studios. We've been touring together a couple of times over the
Yeah, I saw some videos from your tour, and there's some lovely stuff coming out of there. I bet that's going to be a great album.
Well, that one has got more pipes on it.
Oh, does it?
There was more immediately interesting from the point of view of the pipes. The majority of piping on that album is accompanying songs. So I'm accompanying myself while singing, and I'm accompanying Alistair while he's singing. And then we do two instrumental sets, I think we do. We don't do much in the way of instrumentals. And the third recording project that I've done recently, and none of these are released yet, is that I've, over the course of the summer and the autumn, I've been making visits to record with Owen Tierney in Attic Records in Orkney. And that's a solo record, and again, folk songs. And that's much more traditional, I would say, even than the stuff me and Alistair are doing. But it's if anything, there are similarities. I mean, there's traditional ballads on all these records. But that's the most kind of niche, if you like. I think it's got some rare versions of ballads that that I haven't heard recorded elsewhere, but it's got some better known stuff as well in it. And those, all of those, what are we going to do with them? So the one with Alistair is going to come out during the summer, probably late summer, before we go on tour again, because we're going to do a gig at Celtic Connections at the end of next week, and then we're going to play in Fife the following day in Cambo House, and after that we won't play again until October, when we're touring. So we won't play live again until then, and that record that we made this week isn't going to come out until just before that tour. The record that I made in here in December with Rudy Geddes is going to come out as soon as I can, as soon as I can organize that. So that'll be coming out probably in the spring, hopefully.
And that's the one that you said was all live, like a 90-minute straight shot kind of thing.
I think we recorded a total of 91 minutes, and I do like all of it. So if I do all of it, it'll have to be a double CD.
Bring it on.
Yeah. And the one with Alistair, I think we did about 14 tracks, but I think we're going to cherry pick that, because we've recorded in Glasgow, we recorded direct to tape, and we're going to try and get an analog tape master and make a vinyl out of that one. We're also going to make a CD. The CD will be slightly longer and will obviously have been digitized, whereas the vinyl is going to be hopefully from a tape master. And that was something that we're kind of working on just now. But there are going to be a couple of videos coming off of that, one of which is the song Peggy Gordon with us in guitar and singing, and the other which Alistair's singing a ballad, Jock Hawk's Welcome to Glasgow. And I'm playing the pipes along with that in E minor on an A chanter. I've got the tuning screws now on all the holes, and so I rebalanced the chanter to an E B drone configuration. So took up the F sharps and the C sharp, took them up so that they were pitched for the E B drone config. And that sounded, I really enjoyed that one. I'm looking forward to hearing that. Hopefully the videos for those might even be ready next week. We're hoping to put them out before we play Celtic, and we'll see. Martin Forey did the filming yesterday, so he's going to try and cut that. He did it live. We recorded them live, and he filmed us with one fixed camera and one camera in his hand. So hopefully that'll be out fairly soon. The stuff with Owen is going to remain relatively obscure. I'm thinking probably I will put that on a vinyl as well, and not release that one. The other two will be released on online in some form. The songs that I've recorded with Owen, I'm hoping just to put them on a vinyl and not release them online, and just have the record shop in Orkney. So that'll be a hard to find.
That's cool. I mean, I respect that, Donald. There's part of me that's like, hey, come on.
Yeah,
I want to hear it, you know, but I respect it.
I'll give you the address at the record shop.
Deal. That's good enough. I'll get over there. Yeah. but like to that point, before I forget to bring it up, because it's happened to me before that I get through a whole interview and I forget to bring it up. Where is there a central place that people should be looking as these projects are coming up so that they know, you know, when a thing is available? Is it the website, the Facebook page? Like, what's the best place?
The website. I'm pretty good now. I'm getting better at keeping the website up to date and the discography fairly up to date. I think it does have the most recent thing that I did, which was the 4-track EP that we released in September, which also was vinyl only and just a short run.
With Alistair, right?
Yeah, that was with Alistair. And that came out on Sonido Polifonico, which is Paul Cross runs this label from in Sheffield and does short runs of lathe cut vinyl. So in keeping with you know, the kind of thing that the approach I'm taking to the other recording that I was talking about. But the best place probably to get kind of advanced warning of things is probably always going to be at the moment my Facebook, because I do tend just to put little mentions onto that. I'm trying to use Instagram more because I find a lot more people use it and find it easier to use, maybe. A lot of people seem to pick up on things. If I do the tiniest post on Instagram, I seem to get a lot more. So, Facebook and Instagram, and if you use Instagram, I'll try and use Instagram more. So hopefully that will be busier. I certainly put something on that today about the studio engineer from this week. Sam had posted a video clip of one of the songs that we'd done, and I've shared that.
Yeah, that was the reel-to-reel thing, right?
Yeah.
I saw that video. Very cool.
Yeah, for Pipers as well, something to know. For anybody who's interested in the whole Chanter Lindsay system thing, basically... So apart from the stuff that Ali and me have done, I've got a kind of a outline of a plan that I'm working towards, which is that now that I've finished recording with Owen with the songs, and now that we've done the recording, we've done the recording in here in December as well, I'm intending to work towards next winter. Probably start in the summer, like I did with the songs of Owen. Recording solos with Owen, hopefully, in Attic, which he's just quite happy just to keep on. We do things like one and two at a time there. And then in the winter at some point to hopefully come in again to Watercolor and do some tunes on the pipes with Rue as well. So like... maybe it's a little bit fussy of me, but this year I'm doing everything with songs, and next year I'm planning to do a whole load of instrumental stuff. A solo record and a record in ensemble, or at least with Rudy, would be great. That's some things I've got planned. And no doubt Alistair and me will be recording again. I'm certainly hoping that we might put something together annually. We're planning on being regular, maybe in the autumn touring. I mean, it's like you say, with having the business on the go and everything, I was away a lot this autumn, just because this is the first time that I had, you know, really gone out on the road properly. I've done this and that over the years, but I've never really done block touring like that.
So
that kind of got off to a flying start, and what with that and all the recordings that I've done, I feel like I've been away as much as I've been in Orkney this autumn. So from February onwards, it's really back to Orkney and back to zooming about in the van and doing all that stuff, and I'm kind of wanting to keep the music you know, happening, but not too much. Because I don't want it to kind of derail everything else in my life. It's too much fun.
That makes sense.
Too much fun. Very easy for that to happen. But
Donald, is it unfair for me to just like just completely give in to this? I'm feeling more and more all the time like this desire to just be like, I'm going to model my entire life after Donald Lindsay's. Like some of these things that you're describing just sound like, it sounds like such a good idea, and like it sounds like you have like some control over like being like, you know what? I'm going to do this year. I'll do that next year. And I feel like for me personally, I'm so often just like frazzled, just like trying to chase seven different things at the same time in the same minute, you know? Geez, maybe I need some of that island life. I need to move to Ascension for a year or something, huh?
that certainly helped. I think that was probably the gear shift, because yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had my days of running around frazzled, doing lots of different things, and moving to Ascension, it's like down there. At first, when you get there, it's a bit crazy because, like any island, the usual suspects will home in on the new arrivals and try and noise them. It's a small town, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But once you've endured your time of that, and they've moved on to the next person, then and obviously with me bringing my bagpipes, I was a very easy target for this.
Sure, yeah.
It was a bit boring for a while, but it passed over. And once you get used to the place, it's like doing the same day over and over again, and that might sound terrible, but it's in the best possible way. You know, once you learn to do it properly, it's exactly what you make at that place. And it is like doing the same sunny, I would think of it as a kind of July day, over and over again. And once we got that into our heads, we were like, okay, so why do we even have to eat in the house? We know it's going to be sunny, so let's have a picnic today. And then that becomes, let's have a picnic every day.
Yeah.
And then that becomes, let's have a breakfast picnic.
Because the sun never go inside again.
Yeah, let's just go in our shorts the whole time. And sun comes up at 6 and you get golden hour for an hour. And it goes down about 6 or 7 and you get golden hour for an hour. And so what are we going to do? We're going to go somewhere for golden hour, sit near the beach or on the beach, have a picnic. There's this lovely place called Turtle Ponds where all these baby fish are swimming all the time. So like little five fingers fish, little tiny red fish, and you can dip your toes in the water and they sit and they nibble your toes. And you know, and you just kind of get really good at doing this one day over and over. And there's a little outdoor pool in the village, and there are walks in the sort of the forests on the mountain where you can get your bananas. And you get really good at doing this loop over and over and over. And, you know, I mean, we really had it good, though, because my wife's office, because she was the island social worker, was 2 minutes walk from the house and was the only government office in our village, which is the village halfway up the mountain in the middle of the island. Basically, it's the sleepy village of the island. They said to her,
of the two, yeah, of the places on Ascension that are quiet, this is the quietest one.
This is the quietest one, exactly. There's a wild side to Georgetown, because that's where some of the younger conservation interns are. So they like to have their parties, and sometimes you can hear you hear the sort of the very small amount of noise that creates. But yeah, I mean, they said to her, oh, do you want an office in the main government building in Georgetown? And she was like, no, it's fine. Don't worry. Don't put yourself to any trouble. Because she had this great little, a little tiny sitting room there for meetings and stuff, and a little office. And I could just sort of shamble along and hang out in this little sitting room and have tea and biscuits. And there was a sheep that used to sit out the door. There are feral sheep all over the island. And there was this sheep that just used to sit outside her office all the time and kind of look in the door and stuff. It was like that. It was definitely, I think it was the gear shift that we're still kind of working with now. It certainly, as well, being out there and going out there with the family, it just puts family like right in the center of everything, which was really welcome. It was really good because, you know, you just always have the time to go and do stuff and nothing's very far away.
This is maybe just like yet another, I tend to have many existential crises in public rather often. And that's maybe part of what's making me feel this, like, I just want to be like Donald, is that like my oldest kid is about to turn 13 and I'm just feeling this panic, you know, that it's like, it's almost over, you know, like, so I'm thinking, you know, I'm sure there's part of this like, oh, I could work with my son in his 20s. Now, there we go. Then I extend the time with him a bit, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right. And Orkney is bigger and busier, feels like, to us, having been in so long. Had we come up there direct from Glasgow, it would have seemed like a real kind of downshift in much very relaxed compared to Glasgow. But coming from Ascension, mainland in Orkney certainly seems, you know, much more bustling happening. But it does still have that kind of everything's within arm's reach, and so you know we're working our way around the mainland doing jobs for people, and we're kind of at the same time we're working our way around the cafes of Orkney and working out which ones are good.
Also important, yeah.
So yeah, I mean it does still have that kind of which I think you know, I think it is you know, so easy. To get your attention, you know, taken up with so many different things. And, you know, I think I was in that kind of zone before we went to Ascension, where I'd be nipping over to Edinburgh some nights to teach. And this is great because I'm very social and I like to be doing things like that and be involved in lots of different things. I was teaching over there. I was teaching in the Piping College. I was contracting during the day with my dad at that point. And everybody going to school in different places, you know, our youngest at nursery, our daughter was at primary school in Shawlands, our son at that point was in secondary school, and Hannah was working in further over in the south side, and I was working all over the city, and so very typical life, very busy life. And then all of a sudden, we find ourselves in this place where everything, you know, there is just one space, really. And everything in this one place. And once you get into that, it was quite an experience.
I mean, part of this is, of course, like I was talking about when we first started talking, like the things that get to me go through so many filters. So like a lot of this might be my perception of what your work is, you know, and it might not be accurate, but it feels to me like as a consumer of the art that you're producing, that you're exploding with projects right now. There's tons of stuff happening. And yet when talking to you, it sounds like you've found a kind of like quieter, kind of chill kind of way of going about life. And it does make me think about this, like, what's the word? Paradoxical thing that Kenny Werner brings up in, I just did an episode with my friend Swan about the book, and I can't remember what it's called, Effortless Mastery. He's a jazz pianist, and he's talking about like kind of how to take the work out of music and stuff like that. And he talks about how, like, if you can let go of the pressure to create, you'll create, kind of thing, right? Like, so I don't know. I don't want to put you in a box or force you to have this opinion or anything, Donald, but it's just striking me as, at least from the outside looking in, something possibly similar, that it's like, well, if I wanted to get a bunch of projects done, me, right, I might focus on those projects and struggle to get it done. But if I put my focus somewhere else, you know, maybe creative projects would just flow in a natural way. I don't know.
That's possibly part of it, yeah. There is also something though about, and this is, again, it comes back to this Ascension trip, that taking the whole thing completely out of context to a place where it had almost no audience at first at all. By the end of the time we were there, I was able to organize what Hannah and me called, songs and cake, because she's quite good at baking.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And we did this in the library. And we did it at Turtle Ponds, I think it was. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember where else we did songs and cake. It was at Two Boats Club, which is basically, Two Boats Club is basically a bar on a long balcony, which has this stunning view. You're halfway up the mountain, so you're maybe about 1,000, it must be about a few hundred feet up anyway. And this balcony, this veranda of this long sort of concrete bit where all the tables are, looks down over all the desert to the ocean. And so I love Two Boats Club. And it has a little stage at one end, which is like a little, actually, acoustic sort of box of a stage. So we did Songs and Cake there, and we did Songs and Cake in the community library then in Georgetown. And so by the end of it, yeah, there was this little knot of people who had found out that they liked this and would come along and listen to a bit of Small Pipes and a bit of... And the other thing that we did towards the end was... So I pieced together, so I just completely thought outside the box about it while I was there, because I thought, well, you know, it's a completely different environment. So I tried to write music that was completely untethered, if you like. And I've still got an album's worth of recordings done in Murreal in 2021 in Shetland, in Lerwick, in the studio in Murreal, at the end of a short tour that I did in Orkney and Shetland in 2021 on a break from Ascension. And those pieces, none of them are, they're all just original compositions and they're all completely outside the box. And they went along with an edited 50 minutes of home video from Ascension, with all cut into what I thought of as music videos, really, about 5 minutes long or thereabouts each. They tended to blend into each other, just sort of segue into each other, and they tended to be pretty abstract and, you know, and sort of meandering. And the tunes are kind of meandering as well, quite melodic, but they're quite meandering as well. And I'm kind of sitting on that. It's very good. I like it a lot, but I don't want to release it first. I want to make, pardon me, I want to make these recordings that I talked about. I want to make something very kind of gritty with Owen, an attempt at doing a kind of a Drones and the Chanters of the Lindsay System Chanter. You know, which is a long shot, because obviously that is something coming out of a long tradition there, whereas I'm building on only 10 years of having been messing around with this wee chanter and on the couple of decades before that of having dreamed about a chanter like this. But I think I can do something really fun and interesting and very varied as well, with, you know, all different types of pipe music and very kind of raw and solo. And I would like to do that first and just get those traditional tunes that I've been messing around with to the point where I'm finally ready to commit to making a recording of them, and overanalyze them and just let them kind of breathe. And then to do something with Rue as well, which would go into a completely different space, would be great. But then after that, I'm definitely going to release this Muriel thing, which is the kind of upshot of Ascension. And it went with this film, and we even got the chance to show that on Ascension, because the American base, as luck would have it, has an open-air cinema with a great big concrete breeze block wall that they built and plastered and whitewashed, and all these benches. And when we arrived, the American base commander was a guy, Vincent Bongioani, who went by the name of Major B, because he said that his guys had trouble pronouncing his Italian second name. But he is a lovely guy and quite kind of social and into the idea of, you know, you can just rock up to them based there. They know who everybody is on the island, so you can go to the burger bar and so on. They banned the Brits from their shop, though, because I think the Brits were buying all their booze. That's the only place you can't go. So we went to the burger bar and the cinema. The opening cinema is right behind the burger bar. And Vinny is very into Studio Ghibli. Going Totoro and Ponyo and all the upside down one and all these brilliant films out under the stars at night in Ascension. So we got hooked on the outside cinema. And by the time we got to the third year, so we'd had two other guys in who were running the base. Both of whom were quite friendly guys as well. And the second guy who was in continued what Vinny was doing, but showed nature films, which was cool as well. And then the final year we were there, the third guy, I spoke to him and I said, could we show this film in the open air cinema? Yeah, sure. So he sorted out for us. And we showed this 50 minutes, which is mostly set on Ascension, and I sat there with the small pipes and played the soundtrack for it all.
Oh, so you played the soundtrack live while the video played? Exactly. Oh, very cool, yeah.
I did that in Orkney and Shetland as well, but this was on that in Orkney and Shetland. This was in our last year on Ascension. Again, our following, our friends, our people who decided that they kind of liked this came along and enjoyed it. And
Was there cake? And if there wasn't, were they disappointed?
I can't remember if there was cake. I don't think there was. I'm as good as certain, though, and they would have been and the thing that Hannah got legend status for on Ascension, which is saying something, was banana bread. Everybody makes it on Ascension. Uh-huh. But she made this banana bread, and she's always been good at banana bread, and she perfected this banana bread with these very sugary, very small bananas that had where the crust would just kind of caramelize, and the thing inside would be super moist, and then this caramelized crust, and it was a bit of a legend. This, so yeah, there would have been absolute disappointment of the lack of banana bread.
But
although there was always the American Burger Bar, where we would get things, they had all their specials, and they did them their own way. So you know, it was like their version of a Philly cheesesteak, and jalapeno poppers that they did, which were, I don't know if they were typical of what you would get in a cafe in America, but to us they were kind of normal. They were different to how you would get it in Glasgow, even if you ordered something like that. So yeah, we would have some of that, but certainly no cake would have been a disaster. I can't remember. But it definitely there for the where the show was in the villages in Georgetown and in two boats.
Yeah. So where excuse me. It's snowing really heavy right now. It's like our winter came late and it seems to be affecting me a bit.
Last week we had that here. In fact, I popped in here in Argyll last week, and by the time I got down here, Fort William and Argyll are kind of further west, so there wasn't any snow lying directly here. But as I was traveling down here from Inverness and got up to Port Augustus, which is a wee bit higher altitude, it was 4 in the afternoon and had been sunny all afternoon, so it should have been all kind of a little bit melted. But it wasn't at all so cold. That it was like a picture postcard. It was just amazing.
Well, you just travel from picture postcard to picture postcard there, don't you?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. One beautiful setting to the next.
it's very very picturesque. And Orkney's got a very particular look. Have you been up to Orkney?
No, I've never left the North American continent myself.
Oh yeah. But it's quite a contrast to mainland Scotland, because the Orkney Islands are mostly very flat. So you've got these wee flat, and the further north you go, so when we've been working on these North Isles like Sandy and North Ronaldsay, they are really low down to the sea. So you just see sky, sea, and then a kind of strip of land. Sandy lives up to his name. It's got these enormous beaches on it. We were there for 2 weeks as well. And the house we were staying in had emus in the garden. Weirdest thing.
Oh, really? Not what I would have expected.
Yeah. My dad had come out late with us for the first week of that. So I wanted to see how we were getting on and see how my son was doing with his apprenticeship. And so we were on site together on Sunday for a week, and it was great fun. And my dad grew up in Australia, so having emus in the garden.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it brought back all these memories. So we had all these interesting about camping in the outback, near Whyalla in South Australia, where there were flocks of wild emus at the time. I'd go to the toilet during the night because of all these
emus. Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know if they go, but certainly the Sunday, the Orkney emus seem to go to sleep at night and then come up go in the morning to look at you while you're having breakfast.
Hey friends, thanks so much for tuning into this episode, and many thanks to Donald for coming on again. A lot of fun to talk with him. I just want to give you a quick heads up. From here on out in the interview, there are some audio quality issues. The internet maybe was coming and going, and we realized later too that Donald, the battery on Donald's phone was starting to die, and eventually it does die. So I'm excited that we were able to recover the audio at all. I was worried at first it was going to be completely lost. So I'm going to go ahead and keep everything that we captured in here. As the quality deteriorates, it kind of comes back now and again, and Donald still says some interesting stuff. So if you want to stick around, stick around and check it out. But I just want to give you that heads up. Also, I'm going to go ahead and give away a copy of History of Sleep. Actually, now I think of it, so History of Sleep is an album that Donald made with Richard Youngs a while ago under the name Good Energy. And it occurs to me now that by the time this episode goes out, Donald might have some other offerings out there available. So I guess the winner of this drawing, I will reach out to you and see what of Donald's music you would like
as your prize. So if you want to support the show, remember you can go over to Patreon, or there are other ways to support too. I'm never going to forget you, Jim. And so, you know, feel free to come on over anywhere you like. And, you know, any way of supporting the show is great. And, you know, really just listening. Just listening and, you know, kind of chiming in once in a while, listening, sharing it around. You know, just that kind of stuff is, of course, super helpful. So don't get me wrong. You don't have to send money or gold bullion or unwanted instruments to me. You just can if you want to, is all, you know? So anyway, let's see here. We have got the Cthulhu Dice Tower here, and we're going to need our current membership over on the Patreon is 13 plus Jim. So we're going to need at least 14 slots. I'm going to use a D20. If we rolled above 14, we'll just re-roll. So let's see here who's going to win. Oh, one. That's going to be Camille. Camille, the first, the original supporter of the show. So thanks so much, Camille, for your support. I'll be reaching out to get you a copy of something from Donald Lindsay. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the interview, and check out the show notes for links to like Donald's website and some of his social media stuff. He is actively making exciting music and cool instruments, so new stuff all the time. Thanks again, and have a lovely day or evening or weekend or whatever it is you're working on. Really appreciate you, and bye-bye.
Well, Donald, maybe there's not a direct reason for me to think of it, but I don't know if you ever saw this Beatles film, and I'm trying to remember if it was A Hard Day's Night, but there was this funny little joke scene where one of the managers is begging, I think Ringo, no, it was George Harrison, to teach him how to use an electric razor to shave. And he's like, or no, he's begging him to teach him how to use a straight razor to shave. And George is like, I can't believe you never learned how to use a straight razor. And the answer was something like, come on, please. I come from a long line of electricians. Right? It's like he'd only ever used an electric razor, right? And I mean, maybe that's why I think of it. If you come from a long line of electricians, you're part of a long line of electricians, right? But like, where does the interest in analog come in for you? Have you always, because you know, clearly you're interested in tape and vinyl, et cetera, you know, the mediums being important. Is that always been with you, or is that a new fascination that came on as you got older kind of thing?
It's a new fascination. And I can exactly where the balance tipped. I was curious about it for a while, and we'd done recording before in New York. And Sam has a setup to do analog recording all the way through the signal. But the balance tipped for me when I began going along to Attic Records in Berkeley. And I noticed that Owen's setup basically is almost entirely analog, and the only thing that's digital about it is a digital hard drive that somebody has got rigged up for him, so they use that to record onto. No computer involved there, and no Pro Tools anywhere near that suit. But he's got some beautiful old valve mic. And fantastic, and this lovely space that got help from the guy up in Orkney, setting up to Orkney. Owen had the setup for the Orkney musicians for the new radio station, and set it up in his loft. And this chap came and looked at it, and he said, "You don't really need to, you know, make this room." And he told him exactly how to go about it. So he's got bits of this loft are wood paneled, parts of it are belted, and so on. And it just gives you a lovely sound. But the reel-to-reel was broken down. And so I asked him about it. I said, because I could see that there, and it was the pinch roller that melted. And he said, yes, I need to get one, but I'm using this hard drive. And I said, I know a guy in Glasgow who I would like the roller for it. It needs a bit cleaned up because what happened was when I brought this pinch roller up, we then spent the evening going through 1980s Orkney folk recordings.
And oh, that's cool.
We had been listening to stuff off of his hard drive already. And yeah, difference, it sounded good enough off the hard drive. Difference, because we went on to the reel-to-reel tape, just blew me away.
Hmm.
And I thought, Yeah. I mean, I thought, you know, if you've got the right listening equipment, if you've got the right equipment, it does matter. So I thought, I want to do a recording where I go. And I would really like to do a recording in with the valve mic and go all the way through. But it'll involve cleaning up that old reel to reel. So that's another project for this year to try and get cleaned up. Because what happened was we got through so many tapes and listened to all kinds of different stuff and old Ivan recordings and dance band stuff. And then no one said, do you want to record something? I went through. And unfortunately, after a couple of takes, it started to wow and flutter a bit.
Hmm.
And so I think that's probably just the thing.
Hmm.
Where to start with that? So I'm hoping that I can get, as luck would have it, Sam, who's the engineer door, he also grew up in St. Margaret's Oak, so he comes up door. And so I'm hoping to arrange a bit of a play in the studio day with Sam and Owen at some point, if they're both up, to try and get the old one added wheel to wheel working again. Do with it. But Sam has a great setup there as well with the door, so you know, I'll definitely be back in there too.
Does that, have you thought about, like, maybe this is just me, so feel free to throw the idea out, but I'm just curious if, like going from, like, I'm thinking of, like, your optical chanter, for example, like, very interesting digital components, you know, plugged into each other, stuff like that. Like, are you imagining, like, bringing worlds together kind of thing, or?
Well, enough, the optical chanter is also analog. So it's got a in read. And it's got a LED pointing up into a photo transistor. And that is analog. It seems to be hot as hell when I put it through a Marshall. That's what I love about it. You know, as compared to the sound that you get from a Dagger or something, this thing comes roaring out of it. Absolutely. That's how it sounds. And obviously, it does everything. It is an acoustic pipe, so it's electroacoustic. And what a sound! But you've got to be very careful about the choice of phototransistor, because the first phototransistor that I used with it, on paper, should have been picking up to 20 kilohertz, but I took it into three improv sessions that I involved in regularly at Glasgow in the old hairdressers. And that night it was Luke Fowler, who is an artist in Glasgow, and he's very into the modular and other things besides filmmaker. Sebastian Lexer, a pianist who does free improv as well with various instruments, zithers and things. And Luke, I said to Luke, I've got this thing with me. The fancy plugging that into the modular and you could process the output. He's like, yeah, sure, give me the lead. And he plugged it in and said, Donald, you realize this is only picking up to about 4 kilohertz? And I was like, yeah, I didn't think it sounded a bit, you know, lack. I'd only really, you know, I'd sort of finished tinkering with it and then run into the pub to play it. And I was like, I did think it sounded a bit funny. He was like, yeah, there seems to be absolutely nothing above 4. And I was like, that figures. So I went home and I took another look online, found the fastest one I could possibly get. And shoot, the sound then popped out. And it doesn't sound exactly like a small pipe, but you wouldn't really want it to see how it'll think.
Make it its own thing, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like itself. But that was, I mean, he processed it then to have overtones, or whatever he did. I can't remember what he did to it, but he did all kinds of things that night. And we just went down with it, but, it was a matter of, getting one that was the fastest one that it was RS components. I went to it was whatever was in there, the fastest one was a VJ. And I used to be able to go the speed on it when I was really into this. I remembered all the details, but it's that long since I've looked at the optical chanter from it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's on the it's on the bench just now. It's on my list. Mm. Too, but before I get round to that, I've got orders that I'm finishing at the moment. Chanters. So I've got chanters and sets of pipes, and I want to have them out next week. And I'm very excited about that because that's you know, it's one thing to be going around playing with myself, but as soon as I start sending out chanters and the group of people who play it starts to grow again, it gets very interesting.
Well, I think that's really interesting, Donald, that like I really like your music. I like the music that you make, but I certainly don't understand everything that's going into it. And that's a great example where like I would have assumed if you'd like, it's like one of those things where like I wouldn't have had to carry the model in my head all the way through to the final step. But if I had carried it through, I would have assumed that at some point that optical chanter was going to have a USB-C port or something. And there's going to be some kind of like the way sound was coming was going to be digital. And so it does make me wonder, like, and I wouldn't want to mess with your head in any way, and I don't think that it would be, like, I'd have the power to do so anyway, but, like, is part of what is cool about your music is that you're doing the things you want to do, and you're not thinking to yourself, will my audience, you know, understand? Will they get why I'm doing this? You know what I mean? Like, if you were making it for me, you would have done different stuff, because I wouldn't have understood what is going into your thinking. And yet, because you did it the way you did, I like it. You know, what's that? What kind of magic is going on there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's, I understand what you're saying, because it does come from, you know, the whole thing comes from this 3D printing space. And so, are you going to put one of these Raspberry Pis on the top of it or whatever? An Arduino,
yeah,
or however you say it. And I
nobody knows how to say that word. Yeah, don't worry. Arduino, we all know what you mean.
I haven't even gotten into all that yet, but I have thought about doing it. I've got a certain amount of knowledge that I could probably work it, but that's not at the moment the direction I'm going with it.
And yeah,
coming from is more that, you know, I thought we've got electronic chanters. It's almost as if we've gone straight to the Rockstar game controller as pipers, and we don't have guitar. And that's what with the electric guitar.
Interesting. Okay.
Animal. It breathes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Growls.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, my when you plug this thing in, it's hot as heck. Really fun to play with. And that's what I wanted from it.
Mm.
The thing that led me to the optical was, and it was years and years ago, and I was doing this with the Highland Pipes years and years ago, trying different things to pick up, and I had bought a book on it. It was Bart Hopkins' book about electronic pickups and various kinds of instrument pickups. And so I had a magnetic coil pickup. There's a guy that did that in Wales, made his own bagpipe that had a steel reed and a magnetic coil pickup.
Wow, really?
He did it. The idea I'd had years ago was to put a little bit of steel foil onto a cane reed and see if that would work. Never actually around to making that work. But I did make up a bagpipe stock, a Highland Pipe stock, which had a flexible piezo in it, which I suppose was just working as a kind of microphone, but which did give you something of the effect. But it was terribly tinny, and so it didn't have that hotness that I was looking for. Whereas the optical, something about the way it's picking up means that it boosts the fundamental. If it's a fast enough E, then it picks up the whole of the range of overtones, and so you can EQ it. It's harder to EQ than a usual bias, though, because it moves with the note being played. Fundamental. And I thought to myself, is this something about the way that the reed moves? Or is it that because you're shining the light through the reed, you're kind of getting the sound of a chanter if your ear was next to the reed? When it would be a heck of a lot louder than it is when you're listening from the outside, so to speak. But in any case, it's a good problem. I like it. Because it gives it this very hot, very thick, while it's still at the same time, it has all its overtones as well, and you can get all that color. which that just, like I say, that's just about the choice, the right choice of receiver system. And then you can put it through a preamp. You can build a circuit. I've built circuits. I was working with an LM386 for a while. And then somebody knew more about audio than me said, no, you want to use this chip. But it actually doesn't need it. Particularly the Chanter, but Chanter and drones, you can just put the output of the phototransistor straight to the jack and just send it. It is a very simple idea at root. It works. I still like the idea of the steel reed.
There's something real just metal about that, right? Like, that's kind of a pun, right? But really.
And what he said, Paddy Whetman is the guy. He made his own kind of pipes up. He wanted this thing that sounded a wee bit like, he had a sound in mind he was going for. And so he made this thing that sounds sort of like Illand pipes, but not quite. It's a little bit more aggressive sounding. Somewhere between the pipes and Illand pipes is what he was after. And it has this, and he said he made his one, and he made one or two or three of them for other people, I think it was. And then he couldn't find the right steel again. He went to all the home find, and he couldn't find the exact gauge that he needed. What he could find didn't work. He wasn't able to make it out of it. So there the project. He's still somebody else. There's at least one other person who's got one and plays it. And obviously, if you've got a steel reed and it works, then that's it. You're fine. You know, you're never
going to. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Old or something,
right?
But go over with a bit of steel wool every now and again.
Yeah, that's how you clean it up.
Maybe polish it or something.
Yeah, again. No, that's great.
Just dip it in oil every now and again.
Yeah, oil your pipes in a different way, though.
exactly with WD-40.
Yeah. Well, it's been really delightful, Donald, and I've watched the sunset happen behind you while we've been talking, and that's been delightful too. I'm aware of the fact that I've taken more than an hour of your time right now, and so I don't want to force you to politely stay too much longer, especially where you've got stuff going on. But I also want to make sure that we cover cool stuff that's going on. So, like, is there anything else coming up? You know, stuff you'd like to talk about?
We've got the Big Alice on 31st January, Friday 31st. So come along to that if you're listening. There's some people traveling. And if you're in Glasgow, for example, or if you're coming to the festival, come and catch us there. Anybody who can't do that, and I know even if some people are coming to Celtic, they might have a ticket for something else that night. You will also catch Flambeau House in Fife the following night or following day. And that's not so far away from Glasgow. Other than that, watch out for the videos. And watch out for news of the albums. So I think I'm going to be opening up the album that I did with you for pre-orders. I'm still thinking of the best way to do that, but that one I'm intending to start posting about immediately after Celtic Connect, so the beginning of February. Watch social media for that and for news of the pipe recordings as they go along as well. And there should also be some lovely pictures and videos of the chanters and pipes that I'll be putting out over the next week. So watch out for those as well. They are still the same iteration of the design that I'm playing just now. I think once these ones go out, I've got myself a new computer now, so that my Mac was dying with the weight of the software. It was very so I've got a new fast like back to the drawing again this year, big way. So yeah, things to watch out for. Canters and different keys. I've got the Lindsay Systems Banter working now in A440. I've got it in flat. I've got it in G. I've got one in S that ended up on the soundtrack of that film as well.
That's right, down low, large. Yeah.
Yeah, very large. Yeah. A bit impractical, but it works. And I also have one in A432. Yeah.
So you can play with the Baroque musicians,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, it sounds good. It sounds really good. And it's, you know, somebody said to me, oh, do you believe in all that stuff? And I'm like, well, no, but with pipes, it's not about whether you believe in it or not. You're going to get a different drone pitch if you move different frequency. And I arrived at this one because I had found that sometimes during the process, chanters that I made tuned flatter. And so I had to make adjustments to try and sharpen them up. But then along the way, I noticed that in that area, and it's not always on A432, this one, sometimes it's been, I've had it going on A434, A435, or A436, so I'm not fussy. But in that kind of zone, the flat is slightly flatter than A. It's kind of like the slightly sharper than B flat thing with Ellen pipes, except that where you, it takes into a more kind of mellow zone. And the G chanter I like a lot, but it's too flat to play in the same way. I play differently on the G chanter. Whereas to have a chanter that is A but slightly flatter than A is something that I find very, I like it. It's a good sound.
Do you feel like after playing it, it also freshens the sound of the standard pitch chanter when you come back to it?
Can't,
you know what I mean? Like kind of stepping away from something?
Brighter.
Brighter. Yeah.
And when I play in the B flat, that the B flat is all brightness to me. It's got a kind of a authoritative, kind of slightly more aggressive character, which I like for some students. B goes past the aggression and into a kind of a sort of a very sunny brightness kind of a space. D, I always found D a little too sharp for me, but I'm thinking of going back to it because in terms of the range it gives you, a D chanter would be a really, really good chanter for playing in sessions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I've had one going before. And the nice thing about this chanter in D is that it goes all the way up to high B from low D, and then it goes all the way down to G below that. So
That's a lot of range.
A lot of range. And the shorter the chanter, the more easily it does the extended range.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I find
the D chanter, when I've had a D chanter going, it's very amenable to playing up to B. It'll play further than B, but most of the time you aren't needing to go much further than B. But it will play very easily up to that B. It's that's something that is going to happen again. I'm going to make a D chanter and hopefully kind of nail that design down a bit more.
Yeah,
there's only been one working prototype of that in the past.
I don't know if you shared any videos or anything of it, because I know I haven't seen it around, so that's exciting to imagine for me at present.
Yep. Well, the drawing is there.
Yeah.
The drawing's there, so it's a small matter to make it real again. The one that I ended up experimenting on, this is what happens. The one that I had, it was a lovely chocolate, it was a toffee brown colour with chocolate brown mounts. And it's put it home. It worked really well, but then the experimenting bit on the shoulder said, drill a hole in it. And loads of holes in it. And I perfected there and then things. But there, in the process, it's going to work the pipe. Oh yeah, I can hear you now,
Donald.
Good.
I don't know if you can hear me clearly.
Yeah,
still,
I
don't know if maybe the the internet in Orkney goes down along with the sun or what, but something has just started happening the last couple of minutes. And if I haven't lost... Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure what all might be contributing, but there is, stuff started slipping the last couple of minutes, so maybe that's a sign for us to draw to a close. Oh, but maybe I have lost you.